ways to present the lesson. So I'm first, and I'm doing the Abaca cards. I know that most of you probably have used these, but if you haven't, it's a really easy and effective way for children to see some really nice illustrations. They're beautifully done. They are in our resource room, so if you're looking for these, you're just going to walk straight into the resource room and go straight, and if you walked into that wall, you would walk into the Abaca cards. They're hanging right on top of the flannel graph. So there's many of these packets. They start in Genesis and go all the way through Paul's life. So I can find most of the Bible stories that we're studying in here, but of course not all of them. So tonight I'm just using, for illustration purposes, the parable of the sower. So if you want to look, if you would like to use these, the first thing you need to do, of course, is read the story from the Bible. Make sure you know what the Bible has to say about it. Kind of review it in your curriculum binder so that you know what your objective is, and that will determine where you really want to focus, the points you want to focus on. And they also have a really nice little numbering system. I was going to mention this too. This comes with the Abaca cards, and they have their own notes on the stories. I mean, there have been a time or two where I can't really figure out what is this picture. So you could look in here and see. And of course, you can use all the cards or some of the cards. It just, whatever works for you. So within the packet, there's maybe five or six stories, and they're numbered at the bottom. So you see this would be the first story and the first card. The first story, the second card, and I am talking about stories from the Bible when I say that. Of course, I know that always sounds a little strange. And then so on. So it's really easy to get them back in order. They're just super easy to use. So what I like to do is just put my main points on what I want to make with this card. And I just write a couple keywords so that when I'm holding the card, I can just glance and make sure that I don't forget some of my main points. It's really good to give them some background information, like if they don't know what a sower is, probably don't, and haven't seen maybe that. So this is a good illustration of the different kinds of soil. And again, I just have my notes. Whoops, that's the same one I just did. So that's pretty much what the Abaca cards are all about. Simple way to tell the story. And it's great, you know, if you're not really sure about some more challenging ways when you're first beginning, I would say start with this. Another good thing you can do as you're telling the story, as was mentioned on Sunday, all the classes really need to have some verses read from the Bible. I understand if they're the babies, that wouldn't be true. But most of the kids, you can read a verse or two. So when Karen Smith and I were teaching, what we would do is one would be telling the story and one would have their Bible open and they would read, you know, some key verses as we're going through it so that they hear the Bible at the same time. I think that's important. And if I'm doing this for the first time or if I'm unsure about it, I like to say the story out loud using my little notes and make sure that it's going to run smoothly when no one's around. So some extension activities that you might want to do on Wednesday night, this is a really great way to review it. If you taught with it on Sunday, then you can just do a quick review with the cards, or you can have the kids retell the story as you hold up a card. So it's a good prompting tool. And of course, we know that kids learn best when most of them, when they see and hear, right? And sometimes they can touch too. All right. let's see, you can also mix up the cards and then have them put them in chronological order. If there's not a lot of kids, they might be able to stand and hold one and then mix up and put it back in order. One little tip I have is that a lot of people do use these, and since every class is teaching the same thing at the same time, you know, we don't want to be fighting over these, but a lot of people will go through the binder and pull those cards early in the quarter. So if I wouldn't wait till the last minute if you're planning on using them. Also, I'm sure someone else would share them with you. You can use them at the beginning of class, and I'll use them at the end if it's a neighboring teacher or something. So that's what I have to tell you about the Becca cards. Does anyone have another way that they use them?
So a lot of times the Becca cards are out because I am more of a last minute person. And so I go to Sweet Publishing, and they have the Bible illustrations. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
And they're free. And so I'll go ahead and I'll just do a PowerPoint with those. And they're very similar to Becca cards. And I don't always print them. I have printed them, but I'll put them on a PowerPoint and then just play them on the TV. So then if you're out of the Becca cards, no need to fight over them. Sweet Publishing Bible illustrations.
Sweet Publishing. Okay, that's very good to know. I assume they are the publisher.
I don't think so, but they're very scriptural. There's nothing off about them.
Well, good to know. So if you're tech savvy, like me, you can do that. And I'm sure very easily, so you just download them.
Yeah.
Wonderful. And free.
Sweet Publishing Bible Illustrations. And also, I don't know why, Distant Shores Media. And you go through and they've got almost every book in the Bible. Not every story is illustrated, like the same thing with the Becca card. Sweet Publishing. Google that. I can send the link if anybody.
Sweet Publishing.
But and then it'll say at the very bottom, you go and click on the link for Bible illustrations. And then the books of the Bible come up with a link to the pictures. So what you do is you click on the picture, and if you can copy and paste it into, I do it in a PowerPoint PowerPoint presentation, and then I fill up the page with it. It'll fill up the TV.
Wonderful. That sounds like a great tip.
Yeah, it's a backup for sure.
Also, as another resource, I go to LAMP Bible Pictures, and there is a cost. It's $5, and you get a full PowerPoint just emailed right to you. And you could manipulate it however you want.
That is wonderful.
Yeah, and she's in Australia. Her name's Kristen, and you could email her back and forth, and she'll help you through it if there's any questions. And she's continually adding, and that's on my Pinterest page.
Great.
Yeah.
LAMP.
So we're trying.
LAMP Bible.
LAMP.
Yeah.
Bible Pictures.
Mm-hmm. We're trying to figure out a way, and I'm sure there is a way, where we can share our resources and our ideas on the church website. So that hasn't happened yet. But we're in the beginning.
Terry and I, that was a big conversation on our drive on how we could do that.
Very good.
Yeah.
So I think both of those would be excellent ones. And I have to go, so thank you very much.
Good job.
Thank you.
All right, so this is like the opposite of being tech savvy. And this is, I thought it was kind of funny when I got asked to teach this because this is how I teach often, sort of like on the fly when I do a lesson, kind of when I go rogue a little bit. What I learned, I taught a very short career of 3 years, years ago before I had kids. And I learned just from teaching and also for myself learning, I have a really hard time processing information if there's like more than two characters in a story. I have a hard time keeping track of who's who. And so a lot of times, not to trash the Becca cards, but everyone kind of looks the same in those to me. And so I have a hard time like keeping whatever in my brain. So what I have designed, what I do when I teach sometimes is I draw a picture as I teach. You may have done this before, I don't know. But what I will do if I have a bunch of lessons that sort of connect from week to week. I'll leave my picture up on the board and then I add to it as I go. So just a second before I forget something. Also, I generally bring weird props from my house to kind of keep them engaged, and I can throw something together at the last minute. Lisa's laughing at me. And so this is more for like a type B teacher, not a type A teacher, okay? So this is good. You're going to be like, that's a really ugly drawing, and they all look the same. Like you said, the Rebecca cards do, I realized once I said that, but whatever. So for instance, this would maybe be up on my board, and I'm teaching about Peter. Just a second. If I go slow, it'll use one of my minutes. That'd be awesome. Okay. Okay, here we go. So say this was up, and you come into class, and this is what I was working on the last two classes, and hopefully it will help you to have remembered something. Oh, I would also have drawn up here. But it's supposed to be. Ow. Okay. Oh, my hand is shaking. I shouldn't have had coffee. Okay. That, and then what was my other thing? Okay, and then the heart. All right.
That's an ear.
That's an ear. Dude, I got pain. That was a poor decision. Okay, guys, you're my test class. It's going to get better, I promise. All right. So when I would look up here, I would say, okay, guys, who remembers? It was like a funny animal that Jesus said that he knew Peter was going to betray him if that animal made a sound. Was it a moo? And I'd be like, no, what was it? And then I would come over here and I would point. And they would say, oh, it was a rooster. And then someone would tell me it doesn't look like a rooster. And I'd say, you're right. Okay, and then something else that I found that I could use is the little ones love to, and all everyone likes to do this. Oh, no, Michelle's here, more pressure. Okay. They love to count, right? And so if you use skills that children of that age feel really good about knowing how to do, you incorporate that a lot. So when I taught this lesson, how Jesus, you know, had asked them to watch and pray, we acted it out. We kind of went back and forth over and over. And we counted one, two, three times they fell back asleep. And so I would do that as I would teach. I would point out my G's from my Garden of Gethsemane a lot, and I probably would have left that blank and it would be erased. And so when I would teach that lesson, I would go back and it would be erased. The other thing I like about drawing a picture is that I always include the emotion of the people we're talking about. So I will start them with blank faces, and then we will talk a lot about how they would have felt in that situation. So maybe at first that they would be excited that Jesus had asked them to watch and pray and be there for him. And so maybe they would have big eyes and they were looking, and then, oh my goodness, and then I would erase it, and we would fall asleep. On this lesson, I was thinking we would talk about how Jesus, he was very sorrowful, and what would we look like when we're sorrowful, and maybe we would cry, because he was about to do something that he knew he needed to do, but he was still really scared to do it, and so maybe we would come up with situations in our own lives like that. And so from this lesson, my final point would have been the things that Jesus was saying to them during the process. So our eyes would help us remember, so watch so that you do not fall into temptation. And what Jesus was focusing on is, if this cup won't pass from me, you know, your will be done. Okay, so that would be the week before, and I would note this. I got the 5 more minutes, right?
You got a long time.
I got like 8.
You got like
okay.
8 minutes.
All right, so can I erase this?
Oh, good. Okay, now I can do the part I was going to do.
Okay, good. All right, so then, to up the ante, you bring a knife, but you don't bring just a real one. So, I set this out, and then I would have a bag where nobody would get to see what's in my bag, you know?
All right. What age is that?
I have done this anywhere from second grade down.
Okay.
And so then, you know, if they're older, they come up and they draw the facial expression that you would include with it. And so I would talk now about how at this point the bad guys were about to come, and they were about to come take Jesus away to kill him. And so a lot of times when people do bad things, they don't do it by themselves. They do it, what do you think, Angie? Do people usually do bad things by themselves, or do they usually have a big group?
A big group.
Oh, I need a pen that works. Stink. Okay. All right, let's see if this works.
Okay, so.
So this group was coming late at night. They were going to come try to get Jesus. And there was a man in this group, actually, that used to be a friend to Jesus. And his name started with a J also. Do any of you remember what his name was? Have you heard this story before? It's got two syllables. Jude. Yeah, Judas. That's right. And Judas had made a deal. So these guys, they were kind of mad. And they were looking for Jesus. And let's say that Jesus was over here. And he's, hopefully his heart's kind of in a good place right now because he's just spent a lot of time praying. And he's got his friends there with him. And there's three of them that we want to remember their names for sure. One starts with a Peter, one starts with a P, one starts with a J, and the other one starts with a J. Do we remember what their names were? Peter, James, and John, that's right. And I'd probably write that down again. And I'd say, now, which guy was it that we had been told, we learned that he was going to be denying Christ later on from a couple weeks ago, back here when this rooster crowed. Do you remember which one it was? It was Peter. All right, so keep your eyes on him in this story because he might be doing something in a little while. That's kind of crazy. So anyway, when the bad guys came to get Jesus, they didn't really know which one Jesus was. And so Judas had a secret plan. He was going to show them because he knew, right? He used to be Jesus' friend. And he knew which one he was. And so he was going to have a secret signal. It wasn't going to be a high five. It wasn't going to be a pound it. You know, in our day and age, it maybe would have looked like a hug. But instead, it was actually a kiss. And so then I would draw, and they'd say, oh, kiss you. So then we would draw, like, little mouth. Yeah, he was going to kiss him and try to make it look like they're friends and they're friendly at that point. But really, he was being tricky. So he kissed him, mwah, like that. And then everybody knew who he was, and he was going to take him. So then I would go into, like, the conversation that they had back and forth, but right now I'm shaking too much to remember all the words. And so then I would really focus on Peter, and I would say that, so Peter's kind of like Miss Kristen, so he's got, like, these big, fast emotions, and Peter wanted to protect Jesus, and the way he was going to protect Jesus was with a sword. Took that sword and boom, and guess what? He went after one of the bad guys. And the bad guy's name was Malchus, and I'd write Malchus on it. And I'd say, and he went to protect Jesus, and boom, and guess what? He cut off. And I'd reach into here. Don't worry, it's not real. I'd say, oh, I forgot this. Mwah.
Okay, yeah.
So then I'd say,
she's like
carrot top. Say, did he cut off his arm? No, that would have been a lot of blood. He cut off his ear, right like that. And Jesus, you know, I wonder if Jesus could have felt kind of good because he was getting protected. Did Jesus need protected in that way? Totally not. He did not need that. So he actually picked up that ear, and he put it right back on Malchus. And he said that that is not what we're going to be using our swords for. Are we going to use our swords to cut off ears? And what's he say? We're not using our swords for... Come on, someone read the scripture before. Does anybody remember? It's like, that's not what we use our swords for. Violence. You know, like, that's not how we're going to show what we're all about. And so instead, he says in Acts 2 later on, we basically use our swords to pierce our hearts and to change ourselves in that way. And so then I would leave this up, and then, like, the next time we could remember about our ears and our sword and our heart. Sound decent?
Good.
Whew, sorry. Oh, no, Michelle, you used some of your time.
No, I got till 7:24.
Oh, I'm good.
Your time is slow.
Any questions?
Fast.
Please don't have any questions. Why doesn't this whole thing? All right, so I'll try to get myself together so this will look better before the next
one. I like the stickies, though. Those are...
You did great.
I could make you at a time.
What stickies?
The big post-it note.
Oh, yeah. That is true. So this would be, like, left from before, and then I would just leave it.
But yeah. You usually would do it on the whiteboard so you can erase their faces and do different things. Yeah.
And you're right. You can do portions before that's, like, maybe to make it, like, look nicer or whatever. But usually they think it's funny when they're like, did he fall over? I'm like, no, he's laying down. But you have to be careful to not, like, make it just silly the whole time. But I like to try to tell stories like they sound like they're real. Not as like it's... I'm not really a big fan of that. Okay, is that good?
Tag.
I'm totally filling that gap.
Oh, no. Go for it. All right. And now, introducing Michelle.
Don't forget your lips.
Oh, thank you.
I like the bag of tricks.
Thanks.
There
we
go.
Alrighty. All right.
Lesson just like I would do it as if you were somewhere between like the sophomore, which is like our 3-year-old class. You probably wouldn't go through like first grade. Probably once the kids hit second grade, I think they're going to be kind of past this point and ready for, you know, like actually reading out of the Bible or doing something else. But this is great for the younger aged kids. All right. So we just sat down. The kids are all crisscross applesauce on the floor. And I'll say something like, I'm so glad you guys are here today. We have another very important lesson to learn from God's Word. And do you know where our lesson is found today? It's found in 1 Samuel chapter 3, right here. This is where our story comes from today. Now, does 1 Samuel come in the Old Testament or the New Testament?
The Old Testament,
that's right. So let's say our books of the Bible until we get to 1 Samuel, okay? Starting with Genesis. Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, Joshua, Judges, Ruth, 1 Samuel. That's it. So that's where this is. 1 Samuel chapter 3. Okay, so let's do a quick little review of what we did last week. Now, does anybody remember who this woman is? Her name was Hannah. That's right. And what is she doing? She's right. Do you remember what she was praying for?
A baby.
That's right. And did God hear her prayers? Yes. And does God hear our prayers when we pray to him too? Absolutely. Well, Hannah prayed to God for a baby, and she told God that if she could have a baby, that she would let that baby be his, and that she would raise it for a little while, and then that baby would be his special helper. And God did give Hannah a baby. And do you remember what that baby's name was? Samuel. That's right. So Hannah took care of Samuel for several years. And then when Samuel got older, Hannah remembered the promise that she made to God. And she knew that it was time for Samuel to learn to be God's helper. And so she took Samuel to Eli. Eli was a judge. And Eli was at the temple. And Hannah would visit Samuel every year and bring him a new jacket, but she left him there to live with Eli. And one day, or one night rather, when Samuel was asleep, he woke up because he heard Samuel. And Samuel woke up right away. Woo! He woke up right away. And he went right to Eli. And he said, "Here I am, Eli. You called for me." And Eli said, "I didn't call for you. Go lay back down." So Samuel went back to his bed, and he laid back down. And he fell fast asleep. And after a little while, he heard Samuel. And Samuel woke up again. Whoa, we're going to do it again here. And he went right over to Eli. And he said, "Here I am, Eli. You called for me." And Eli said, "I didn't call for you. Go lie back down." So he went back to his room, and he laid back down in his bed. And a third time, Samuel heard Samuel. And he got up, and he went right to Eli. And he said, "Here I am, Eli." And Eli said, "I didn't call you, but I think the Lord is calling you. So the next time you hear your name, I want you to say, 'Speak, Lord, for your servant hears.'" So Samuel went back to his room, and he laid back down, and he fell asleep. And after a little while, he heard Samuel, Samuel. Samuel remembered what Eli said, and so he
got up and he said, "Speak, Lord, for your servant hears." And then God went on to tell Samuel that he was going to be his special helper. He was going to be his judge. And that he was going to have to talk to the Israelites because they had been acting very badly and been very naughty, and that they needed to be punished. And all the Israelites knew that Samuel was going to be a judge. Now, we've talked a little bit about the judges, and there's 15. So let's go ahead and sing our song. And I want you to listen really carefully for Eli's name and Samuel's name. All right? Othniel, Ehud, Shamgar, Deborah, Gideon, Abimelech, Tola, Jair, Jephthah, Ibzan, Elon, Abdon, Samson, Eli, Samuel. There they are. They're the last two judges. So all the Israelites knew that Samuel was a judge. And as Samuel grew up, he continued to be God's special helper. And God spoke to him several times. And he always loved and obeyed and served God. Now, does God still talk to us like he talked to Samuel? When I go home tonight, am I going to hear, "Miss Michelle"? No, I'm not. How do I know what God wants me to do for him? I'm going to look at my Bible, and I'm going to read it, and I'm going to study it. And one way that I can obey and serve God is by reading my Bible and obeying it. And you can too when you come to Bible class, and when you read your Bible and you study it and you listen out in the auditorium during the sermon. Those are all ways that you can obey and serve, just like Samuel did. And that's basically what I would do like on Sunday morning. And then as a review, I could tell the story again, and I could hand out all my flannel graph pieces, and then the kids can put them up. And they would love the part, you know, where Samuel is awake and he's asleep, and he's awake and he's asleep. And so that they love anything time that they can put something up on the board. These pieces are all found in the resource room, and if you walk through the front door, if you just keep on walking, you'll see two big tan cabinets, and they've got double doors, and they open out like this, and inside those cabinets is just lots of little shelves, and they have a label on them, and that tells you not only what's on that little shelf, and it'll say something like animals, men, soldiers, objects, or scenery, or something like that. But they'll also have a little number on that little tab, too. It'll say something like 150 to 175. And on each piece of flannel graph is a little number. Like this window, the number's like right down here, and it's really little. You probably can't see it from where you're sitting. But each one has a little number, and that's how we know where it goes. And if you have time, and if you know how to put it away, go ahead and figure out where it goes, open that little shelf up and see the little outline, and you can place it where it goes. If you don't know where it goes, or if you don't have time, feel free to just put it in the to-be file bin, because we have some ladies that come in every like Sunday and Wednesday, and they put all that stuff away. So it would be better for you to just put it in the to-be file bin if you're not sure than to put it away in the wrong spot. And if you need help figuring out where something goes, you can, Mona Kane's always in there. She's one of the gals who helps out a lot, or me, or, you know, anybody, really. So let us know if we can help you in any way. And does anybody? Oh, and in the bottom drawer of those double cabinets, there's like lots of extra felt, so you can make a felt board, or you can just staple it on the wall in one of the kids' classes. And Mona said there's also like a book that's by story, and you can actually open that book up, and it will give you all the items you could possibly want to go along with the story. And in the in all the junior and preschool curriculum, I have it all stapled so I can't show it to you, but I actually wrote down all the pieces, like when in the story that is written on your paper, there's actually all the pieces. So if you just grab your lesson book, you can go right in, you can be like, okay, I need an angry mob, I need Jesus, and I need, you know, and it'll tell you all the things you need to collect in order to do the story. So that's, I think, kind of helpful too. But does anybody have any other questions about the flannel graph at all?
You can also print them, pictures of, you know, on record paper, put a little glue, a little flannel on the back if there's, you don't have the pieces you want in that cabinet, or other people got there before you did again. Glue the flannel on, and then you can make your own. Because you know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
That's a good idea.
Print, cut, put on there.
Michelle, does every classroom have a flannel board?
So, not necessarily. So when you're setting up your classroom, that's just something you may have to set up when you are decorating and everything like that. But I think most of them do, but it may not be. I mean, when I do it, this is exactly where I don't want something movable because it will just fall over. Or when the kids put on it, you know, they're not always gentle. So, you know, I like to just have it stapled on the wall so it's not coming down.
Yeah.
in any way. But I think that's it, and I think my time is just about up, so I'm going to get to the next classroom. Thanks, guys. All right, I think I got it. Thanks. Yeah. Oh, let me put my chair. Do you want my chairs back, or are you going to use the chairs?
No, I'm not going to use the chairs. Thank you. Did you guys find
You guys get special points for having to take all your stuff with you and move.
So Miss Karen walked in on me one day when I was teaching, and I happened to be role playing something. So ever since then, she thought I was really good at it. She thought I knew what I was doing. So that's why I got picked for that. First, I'll give you a demonstration, and then I'll give you my talk.
Okay, just give me a second. Okay. There arose in Egypt a Pharaoh who did not know Joseph or his family. He did not like the Israelites, who were growing in number, and he was worried.
I don't like how those Israelites are growing and growing in number. I don't like it at all. What can I do about it? I'm going to make them work really hard so they're going to be too tired to fight us.
Pharaoh made the Israelites to work very hard, making bricks out of straw and mud. He would use the bricks to make big cities.
Boy, babe, these bricks are so hard to make in this hot sun. The Pharaoh's being so cruel and mean to us.
Boy, babe. But all the hard work didn't stop, and the Israelites were growing. They kept having babies, growing in strength. Pharaoh had enough. He decided he was going to kill every Israelite baby born, and that would show him. An Israelite woman named Jochebed had a baby boy, and he was a beautiful baby boy, and she loved him dearly. But she was afraid because she knew that Pharaoh wanted to kill him. She hid him for 3 months, but soon he became too big to hide, and he was probably pretty too loud, too, so he couldn't hide him very much.
I am so sad for my poor baby. What am I going to do? He's too big to hide anymore. I can't hide him. What am I going to do? I know. I'll make a basket, make it waterproof. I'm going to put it in the river. I don't know what's going to happen, but I'm going to pray to God and trust that he's going to take care of my baby.
Jochebed placed him in the basket made waterproof with wood, and set him in the Nile River. She met Miriam. She asked Miriam, the baby's sister, to watch over him. Soon Pharaoh's daughter came down to the river to take a bath.
What is that large basket-looking thing in the river? Maid, go down there and get that basket-looking thing in the river. Oh, it's a baby. It looks like a Hebrew baby. It's crying. Oh, I feel so sorry for this baby. If I don't do something, this baby's going to be killed. What am I going to do? I know I can adopt this baby and make it my own. Then he won't be killed by Pharaoh.
She named him Moses because she drew him out of the water.
Thank you.
Good job. I like the oy vey.
Thank you, Lisa.
You're a good actress, Deborah. Deborah from the Bible.
Good job.
Thank you. So, storytelling, I'm going to use the term storytelling and role-playing. It's the same. I'm going to use it interchangeably. As we know, the Bible's full of stories, and we build our faith on the stories in the Bible. As storytellers, it's our job to make things interesting for the kids so they will remember the stories. And acting them out is one way we can do it. It's a hook to help the kids buy into the story. When we act out stories, it inspires conversation. It raises enthusiasm with the kids. It enhances the community in the room and improves the listening skills. And I like this phrase I read. The best storytelling combines careful and thoughtful preparation with a sense of spontaneity. And I like that. It sort of kind of gives the picture of what we're supposed to do with the story. So I'm going to give you some tips on storytelling. Some of these are my ideas. Some of them are research-based. Some of them just things I read about telling Bible stories. So you want to know your story backwards and forwards. Read it every day during the week when you're going to prepare your story. Anticipate questions that the kids are going to ask. Practice your story in front of the mirror if you're going to act it out. Videotape yourself. It'll help you iron out the kinks that are inevitably going to be there. Plan your takeaway. What is the message that you want the kids to take away from your story? Adjust your story for the age. I mean, I think you can even act out stories in older grades, 4th and 5th and 6th, but of course you're going to present it differently than you would for younger grades. Try to keep it in mind of what the conflict is in the story. I thought I knew what the conflict was in the story, but as I talked it out with my husband, there were layers of conflict, and it kind of helped me with the story think of different ways to present it, think of different aspects to bring out in the story. So know the story by heart, but you don't have to present it rote memorization. In fact, it would probably be distracting if you do that and somewhat boring and too long. So you're going to have to summarize things, still staying true to the text. You want to bring in humor where you can, because kids, of course, love humor. But what's funny to a first grader is not going to be funny to a fifth grader. So, I like sort of making a fool of myself sometimes. So some of the gestures and things I do, the kids think it's funny. So don't do an elaborate production, though. You don't want to sew costumes and make big sets. If you do that, you're going to wear yourself out, for one thing, and you're not going to want to teach. But it's really simple to just grab things at home. I made this, believe it or not, out of foil. This is my shawl. Of course, the baby doll is my daughter's when she was little. I bought this in Disneyland because I like hats. And that's a table runner from my house. So I just use what you have. Of course, the brick is from my yard. Put the kids in a semicircle the front of the room. That way they can see you and you can keep your eyes on them. And you can see from their eyes, are they understanding? Are they scared? Are they confused? Are they bored? Don't ask a lot of questions as you go along. If I was telling a story and I said, how do you think Jochebed felt? It sort of distracts from the line of the story. Be natural, vary your tone of voice, use gestures, use facial expressions. You can ad-lib to some degree, but be careful because you might introduce some things that aren't part of the story, and the kids will walk away thinking that is part of the story. One time I told a story where I was trying to teach the story about the strange fire, Nadab and Abihu, and for some reason, I threw rice on the pretend fire because I thought I was trying to. I couldn't think of anything. Well, the kids through the rest of the quarter thought that was in the text that they threw rice on the fire. So that was a fail for sure.
But that's how you learn, though.
That's true. I did learn from that.
They don't, but you do.
Don't make up story characters in your stories, because we're not really doing Veggie Tales, but and don't give names to nameless characters. So like the worm that ate the plant in the Jonah story, if you named the worm, the kids are going to think that's in the text. So you know, you don't. Yeah, it's not a good idea to do that. Also, I don't think anybody here would do this, but I'm sure you've seen this in some of your research when you're trying to get ideas for stories, telling a modern day version of a story. For example, Satan took Jesus up on the Empire State Building. And that you just, it's not presenting the true text. So just be careful with that. But again, I don't think any of us would do that. And again, pray before you teach and ask God to help you remember the details and not stray from the truth of the text. Some of the activities that you can involve the children in, you can let them retell the story with the props. They love that. We told the story of Jacob and Esau. We made fur gloves, sort of, and then they took turns pretending to be Esau and Jacob and Israel. And that was really fun. And for the rest of the quarter, we played that game when we had time. A surprise bag with props inside of it. They can reach in, guess what the prop is, then tell how that prop has to do with the story. Of course, there's Bible charades. That's always a good one. Bring other adults in to play roles. We did this with Vacation Bible School, and that worked really well. Kids get to know the adults get to know the kids. And brainstorm with the kids. Ask them for their ideas. What do you think would be good to bring? How do you think we can present these characters? So storytelling and role-playing is one of the most powerful teaching tool we have. Our brains are hardwired for stories, so let's use that to our advantage and appeal to the kids. Make it interesting by acting out these parts. And remember to have fun. And to make it fun, it is our job to make things interesting. And the kids will love it if they see that you're having fun. I have 2 minutes. Does anybody have other suggestions that they've done that really worked well in their class? Diane?
I was just going to point out that in the resource room, we have a ton of costumes.
Oh, right.
Yeah. And so that is a good place to look, too.
Yeah, good. And then if you make a costume and you don't mind putting it in the resource room, that's nice that other people can use it. Or I've used things like a sheet. I used a sheet and painted lines on it. It was the jail for stories about Paul going to jail and Peter going to jail. That's worked really well. There's just a lot of different props and things that you can do to make it interesting. And, of course, as I'm sure we've been hearing, just varying things, the way you tell stories, the way you do things is really helpful, makes it interesting. So.
Thank you.
You're welcome.